Dark Side.
How you guys doing, folks? Welcome to the Dark Side Podcast. I'm Dan.
I'm Mike. And Dan, for the first time ever, the Dark Side Podcast is live.
At a con.
At a comic book convention.
At a comic book convention.
Here we are in Edison, New Jersey at New Jersey Comic Expo. Looks like it's going to be a great time here today, Dan. A lot of cool booths, a lot of cool exhibitors here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing stuff that I like already, stuff that I want to bring home with me, and I'm seeing a lot of comic book artists and writers.
Dan's wallet is aching right now.
It is definitely wants to get let out.
Yeah, so we're gonna go talk to some people. You guys are gonna hear that coming up. We're gonna have some great interviews for you, so stay tuned for that.
Come join us. All right, guys, I am here right now with Mike from the 501st Legion.
How are you?
This is a premier costuming group for all things Bad Guy, Galactic Empire from Star Wars.
Absolutely.
How you doing, Mike? How's the show so far?
Doing good. It's pretty packed. It's always busy every year. There's always a good crowd that comes in. Usually Sunday kind of tapers out a little bit, but Saturday it's always hit pretty hard.
That's great. And do you guys have a good show out of your characters?
People reacted
positively to it?
Oh, yeah. I would do Kylo Ren myself. I mean, you have some of the stormtroopers over here. You have Joe and his gunner. You got Donnie here and his AT-ST driver.
Right.
A lot of people know these characters, so when they come up and see it, they're like,
right.
You know, they go crazy.
Pretty excited.
Yeah, they love it.
That's amazing. What kind of I know you guys do a lot of charity, but like, what other kinds of troops do you guys do in the area?
We do some library troops where we'll go there, explain what we do, our costumes, you know, bring some items that are costume items for the kids to look at and check out. And then we also do hospital troops as well, where it might be, you know, May the 4th, we usually go to Goriev Children's Hospital in Morristown.
Oh, that's great.
LFL gives us the sanction to go through with
that. Awesome.
And we get to visit kids in their bedrooms and stuff like that, so it's very cool.
That's awesome. So, you guys, I know that there's other groups like the Rebel Legion, or the Mandalorian Mercs and stuff. Do you guys work closely with them in the area?
We have a great working relationship with the Mandalorian Mercs over there. Ned Jacobs, he's one of the guys with the Mandalorian Mercs. We work great with them. Rebel Legion, good working relationship with them. We have Princess Leia over there. We have R2-D2, the droid builders as well. They come out and they kind of add, you know, it all comes together with the pieces. You know, you have some good guys, bad guys.
A big question I have is a lot with the new movies coming out. Is there a lot of new casual fans that would have maybe not thought twice about becoming a Star Wars character coming into the mix and like bringing themselves over and being like, hey, you know what, these guys do something that's really cool, maybe I should jump on?
Actually, I was never into costuming. I'm not that kind of guy.
Right.
But when I first came over, I went to Celebration Anaheim.
Right.
And Force Awakens was starting to ramp up real good for that.
Right.
And I just saw these costumes in person. I'm like, wow, like, how awesome is that? Just to see. I mean, I was like a big Star Wars fan, but, you know, I had other friends who were like, wow, like, how realistic is that? And now that the new movies are coming out, you have fans that are, you know, they only might be, you know, brand new to the series, but they're like totally into it and they're totally loving it. So I definitely think a lot more people are flocking to it now because it's mainstream.
It's a mainstream part. I find that a lot with a lot of the fandom. It's as it gets reinvigorated and brought back, the fans are just like flocking to it in a way that, you know, there was the original trilogy, then there was the prequels. Now you have these, but these new fans sit somewhere on top of those. I always thought that the prequels would be the last we got of Star Wars.
A lot of the people, like with prequels and stuff like that, it kind of, after Revenge of the Sith, it kind of died out. Like, you know, people were Star Wars fans, but it was like, you know, it wasn't what it is. And then once Disney bought it and they realized, hey, we can make some more movies, because there was originally three more movies.
Right.
They realized, hey, you know what, like, we have, like, we can really get a lot of people that maybe they kind of were Star Wars fans, but there's not much coming out. And then once they reinvigorated the idea with Force Awakens, I think a lot more people were like, wow, that's something new. Like, hey, I know these new actors.
Right.
I think that kind of drew a lot of people in.
Right. And with the new movie coming out, do you guys have a lot of troops planned?
Yeah, we're actually going to do some movie theater troops we have coming up. We're going to be there outside the movie theater helping out with that. Just, you know, like nothing too crazy. Some cons, you know, coming up here and there. And then eventually May the 4th, we're going to have that hospital troop again, hopefully, with Gloria. But we're looking forward to it. We're getting a lot of the newer costumes. It takes a little while for them to get approved just because, you know, people are going to break it down slide by slide to make sure everything's correct before we approve anything.
Right. I know with a lot of the Kylo Ren stuff, there's not a lot out there yet. A lot of back and forth on some color color options of down to the thread.
Now you got panels on the cape, right? How many panels are. It's very hard.
This is a minutia game with these costumes, but yeah. It's guys like these that really put it together and put in the work. So
yeah, like I said, it's not just me. All these other guys here, you know, everyone, they bust their butts. So it's a great garrison to work with, and the Legion as a whole is awesome, and I really enjoy the work they do.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for taking the time out. Take a look at the 501st if you're interested.
All right. We are here with the Ghost Corps, New Jersey. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Well, I'm Tom. And
I'm Mark.
All right, so awesome. So why don't you just tell us a little bit more about the group, you know, tell us what kind of stuff that you guys do.
Well, what don't we do? Well, we bust ghosts.
Yeah, we definitely do. Other than that, we do a lot of charity stuff. We like to raise funds for St. Jude's, and we did the Spirit Children event very recently.
Spirit of Children Foundation, so all the Halloween spirit stores, we would come out with the Ecto-1, the gear. We would do raffles, and then anyone who made donations got turned over to the store directly. And all the money and the proceeds goes to the Hovarian Children Hospital, Children Wings, throughout New Jersey. And those are the same hospitals that we also visit year-round to visit kids that are, you know, not feeling on the up-and-up and just need someone on the dork side to brighten their day and cheer up a little bit.
Awesome, that's great. And, you know, how did you guys first, you know, what are your first experiences that you remember with Ghostbusters? You know, what is it about that movie that, you know, really made you feel good over everything else, that made you feel like that was the thing out of all the other movies that you saw maybe as kids that you wanted to start a group for?
I think the props, in my opinion, and it was my first movie ever in the movie theater, by far.
Mine was more so like a bond between me and my grandfather, you know, like, see, I was four when the second one came out. I was like, I want to see that. And he was like, can't see that without seeing the first one. And against my mother's wishes, because of some inappropriate scenes in the first one, thank you, Grandpa, I got to watch the best movie of all time. And then a few years ago, when I was visiting a close friend that was in the hospital in Westminster, New York, they got wind that there was a guy dressed as a Ghostbuster full gear in the hospital, and they went floor by floor to find me and said, would you come down and see the children? It's, you know, National Superhero Day. So they had, like, Spider-Man and Iron Man, like, hanging off the windows outside of the building cleaning, but it wasn't like the kids getting to interact with their superheroes. So when I went down there, I didn't realize that it was one of the tougher wings that anyone could go down, where a lot of the children don't get to make it home. And it kind of impacted me in a way that, having children myself, I was just like, I think we could do a little bit more with the fun that we have and turn it into, like, a good cause. And now we've got, what, 11 members, yep, in our group, and we feel that no child in need should have borders. So there's 250 franchises worldwide of Ghostbuster fan groups like this that do amazing things for different organizations, fundraisers, and charities. But they usually stick pertainingly to their own communities. But outside of that, we do New York, we do Delaware, we do Pennsylvania, New Jersey, naturally. We feel that a child in need shouldn't have borders to, you know, get some help.
That's awesome. All right, so out of the Ghostbusters, who are you guys' favorites?
Brace Dance. Gotta love my Dan Aykroyd.
I love my Egon.
Awesome. And, you know, as of right now, I know that there's not really plans for them to move forward and do anything else with the Ghostbusters movie-wise. But, you know, if they do go ahead and do another movie, they go ahead and do something new, what would you guys like to see? You know, what's the one thing that you haven't gotten out of a Ghostbusters movie since the originals that you would like to see in the next one?
A couple of things. One, I want to see a Ghostbusters 3. Two, I want to see a sequel for the ladies. I thought the movie was very well done, put together. And I think that, you know, they thought the first movie was good enough to do a second one. Why not the remake have a chance to do a second one, too?
And a crossover.
I mean, we got the comic book that's, you know, Ghostbusters 101. The girls have their own, you know, series now. And we don't like to separate it just like, you know, you would in real life, separating someone by gender, race, or color. At the end of the day, we're all busting ghosts. We're all Ghostbusters. So it really shouldn't matter who's throwing on that pack. We've got some lovely ladies that are in our crew who aren't afraid to get slimed, get their hands dirty. And, I mean, and there are some other things that are in the works. We've got a full-feature animated film that's in, you know, production. And, you know, I think at least the writing board stages. They're saying another standalone, but that's up in the air. And then we've got the cartoon that's supposed to be coming out next year, too, toward the end of the year.
Ecto-Force.
Yep, Ecto-Force takes place in, 2050? It's going to have a series of different Ghostbusters and time travel and all that other stuff. So the Ghostbuster franchise is alive and well, and not in a painting in Manhattan.
Awesome. All right, so where could we find you guys? You know, where are you guys online? If if our listeners want to check you guys out?
We're all over. Our main hub is facebook.com/ghostcorpsnewjersey, and that's GHOSTCORPSNJ.com. And you can search up the same on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Awesome. All right. Thank you guys so much. Great talking to you.
Same here in Dark Force. We're ready to believe you.
All right, folks, we are here.
What is that? Is that a taser?
It looks like a taser. It's a recorder. It's a field recorder, but it might be a taser, though.
Did you record that? That was fun.
we got that for sure.
All
right. But we're from the Dork Side podcast.
The Dark Side.
Dork Side.
Oh, the Dork Side.
Yeah, we could. That's officially
I like
taken.
That.
But
I like
that. No, we're here with Rags Morales, artist. Mainly for what I know you for is for your work on the big blue Boy Scout Superman. So, repping Superman here.
There you go.
I have a couple questions for you. I'm very interested to know.
Yes.
So, you worked on Superman at a very transitional period in the New 52.
Yes.
What was it like to take a character like Superman at such a transitional time and bring him down to this, like, soup to nuts, sort of broken down character, changed, after all that time?
What's your name?
Dan.
Dan?
Dan.
All right, Dave. well, Daryl, let me tell you. No, actually, it was a relief. To be honest with you, I had grown disenchanted with Superman as a character. See, because, you know, I was born in 1964, and I don't remember him being as boring as he was to me from the 80s on. That's no disrespect to the talent handling it. I think they were up against it, to be honest. Here's a character that has done everything. When you get to the point when he's pushing the Earth back into orbit, there's only so much you can go from there. And I think what happens is to show that he's super. He's a Superman, right? So everything he does has to be like penultimate, right?
Right.
And in order for a superhero to be heroic, he has to be faced with challenges, much like Hercules and the many trials that he had to go through. They had to be above and beyond him for him to climb over and overcome. So one thing led to the next, and before you know it, he got to the point of pushing planets back into orbit, and he lost me at that point.
Right.
For me, Superman was never cooler than he was as a Max Fleischer cartoon, you know? And, you know, I had this argument with Jim Shooter. And I says, you know, Jim, come on, man, no. He's like, no, he's Superman. I said, no, come on, he's John Henry, you know? He's fighting the machine.
Right.
And he says, no, he's Superman, he's flying. I says, no, man, come on. And that's just a difference of opinion, you know? And for me, he's got to be able to be hurt. And that's what Shooter says, well, then there's Power Man. I says, but he's the original Power Man.
Right.
Power Man came after Superman. Right. And he lost, and that's what happened. So, you know, you lose that aspect of Superman, well, then there's a void there, and it got filled in by Luke Cage, right?
Right, right.
So that's what happened. So to me, dummying him down was necessary, you know?
Right.
I didn't like that he was married. I didn't like the fact that he had to get to clear things with Lois.
Right.
You know, who had to constantly remind him, but you're Superman. We know that. It's on the title,
right.
You know? So that kind of bothered me.
Right.
So when he brought him back down to, you know, his roots, and I was able to really toy with the idea of him being a farm boy and draw him in the most simplest costume that we could do it, and give him the kind of boots that were old-time farmer's boots that looked like they were handed down from generation to generation.
Right.
That was my intent with it. I really got annoyed when I started seeing, you know, boots with like the new soles, like the common, you know, like hiking boots soles.
Right.
No. Grapes of Wrath. So I hated seeing that happen. So, because you have to think a character through. You have to think of them as people. You have to think of where they were, who they are, and kind of conceive of where they're going and hope that the script matches that. And I think Grant did a great job with that.
Right.
And married all the elements that made Superman over the years. And I had a wonderful time with it. So I loved every minute of it. I truly did. My only regret is that I didn't get a jump start on it like I wanted to, because I was under exclusive contract, and I was waiting for them to give me the next thing, but there was like hush hush, secret secret,
right,
we can't talk about it. So I was begging for work, waiting for work. So finally they got a bunch of covers in for me to do. So by the time I was able to get back on, I already made plans to see my kids in New Hampshire.
Right.
I already planned to see a week visitation. And Grant didn't do 22 pages. He did like 30 pages, 35 pages. So I was already up against it. So by the time I got back, I was behind the eight ball and just trying to work. And Grant's scripts are so tight, so crazy. I just could not just do a simple, you know, get through a job. I had to do, it was very thorough. And so those are the reasons why I was late for much of that book, you know, the right. unfortunate aspect of reality.
Right. And life comes into play a lot with these books. I find a lot of the times when hearing from artists and such, you know, it starts off easier with the book, and by the time they get done with it, they're just so tired.
It's crazy.
From the stress of it.
Yeah, and everybody wants to think it's video games, you know, we're too busy playing, you know, it's a Call of Duty or some stupid shit like that. No. I got four kids, you know, four, and three of them are grown. So, no, I had my responsibilities. It's just saying, no, things get in the way. You know, right. Life is what it is. So.
You're even drawing right now. He's drawing right this moment. The multitasking is real.
People that are waiting for it.
That's insane. Ooh. Another quick question is,
yes.
What is it like? You know, you talked about the Max Fleischer cartoon, you know, which also has a different costume for Superman. What's it like getting to redesign a guy who was literally stuck in the same pajamas for,
I wish I could have done more. I probably would have done the geeky thing and gone right back to the original.
Right.
You know, because there's something that was missing and this is something that was unfortunate. I mean, Jim Lee's great artist, terrific artist, did a nice design, but he gave him a collar. And for me, I didn't like that because what was missing for me, Superman had the one thing that no other superhero has, maybe Aquaman. But he had that low cut around it. So he had a bust.
Right.
You could make a sculpture out of him, you know, from the clavicle up. And have enough of the cape. Nobody else has that. You know, that's just like such a classic, beautiful look, you know?
Right,
just,
right.
You know, there's the man behind all that superness.
Right.
You know, so that's one thing I thought was missing. So, you know, I mean, I was glad to be able to do something that resounded. I mean, you know, that's cool. I really like that. And, oh, by the way, did you notice this pose?
Uh-huh.
That's his pose for the first 10 years of his existence. Because he wasn't flying yet.
That's true. Leaping tall buildings.
He was leaping from building to building. So that's the pose he always was in. He was always in that pose.
I never noticed that.
So that's why I used it again. Yeah, see?
That's excellent.
I think of these things.
Last question.
Yes.
Now, what do you think of the direction, maybe not even so much just the DC Comics, in all of the media, you know, the movies coming out with Superman, and these all the characters. You've gotten to work on some of the greatest DC characters, I believe, over the years. You know, what's it like getting to see them live on the big screen now? And like, what's your take on, like, maybe where Rebirth took them and the movies take these characters?
It's amazing how quickly they can get these movies out now, too. You know, if you look at everything that's going on with Netflix and Marvel, you know, they're just like cranking them out, and it's like, whoa, we can't keep up with that. You know, and to quote Keith Giffen. Maybe time to explore different genres, you know? And the independent market is blossoming and growing rapidly. And why not think of other things to do except having the same old stories and try to rehash them?
Right.
So I can't speak for the future because I don't know what's really going on there. I've never really knew what was going on. Like I said, I had no idea that 52 was coming.
Right.
So they never tell you. You know, it's always, you know, hush, hush until it's time to give it to you.
Right.
So it's... what do you call it? I got distracted.
Girls!
Shh.
Such is life in these parts.
Trying to talk here. Where was I?
He's saying it's about indie comics and...
Right.
And it's time to maybe explore the stories
time,
and other
so,
characters.
You know, and maybe hopefully that'll break the cycle of what I feel has been somewhat redundant. You know,
right.
A lot of these heroes, you know, when money starts being part of the equation, then money is the only impetus for doing the things you do. And there's only so many eggs that a golden goose has.
Right.
So I think, I don't know where we're going. Hopefully it'll be invigorated by people with a broad sense of what's going on around them.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
but, you know, then again, you know, Time Warner's taking over DC, Disney's taking over Marvel. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see where they go.
Great. Thank you so much.
You
and
bet.
Thank you for a great interview from a great artist. But thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Daniel.
So my name is Isaiah Puga. I'm the creator of an original comic about a high school running back who's a serial killer. I've been producing this comic for 2 years now. We're selling at conventions. We're on issue 2. We're working on issue 3.
Awesome. And when did you decide to, you know, that you wanted to go ahead and do your own book?
So originally, I just, you know, I always write. I've always been writing. I just come up with stories. And eventually, I started reading the Walking Dead comic, and I realized you could do comics that aren't about superheroes. You could do comics about anything. They could be realistic fiction. So I had something that I was writing just for fun, just for myself, about a high school student, popular kid, nobody suspects is the serial killer that's causing people to turn up dead in the town. And I said, you know, I could do this as a comic, and I went ahead and did it.
Awesome, that's great. And, you know, who are some of your biggest inspirations when it comes to, you know, your art, to your writing?
I'd say the biggest inspiration was the book American Psycho, which the movie is based off of, with Christian Bale. And I'd say that it definitely inspired me because, you know, you have the story of a Wall Street stockbroker who's a serial killer who nobody suspects because he's so rich and that, and everyone knows him, and it's that was an inspiration for me. Another one was just the actual story of Ted Bundy, because Ted Bundy in real life, I watched a few documentaries about him, and by all accounts, you know, he was like a political advocate. He was a guy who just seemed like a nice, handsome, regular dude, and he was out killing people. And I felt like I could do something like that, but different, with someone who's younger, someone who is, you know, who's in an athletic town, a sports town. And so if you ever hear stories about people in the media who in sports towns who get away with stuff, the coaches cover for them, that was also another inspiration for that, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges of doing your own comic book? You know, obviously a lot of comic books are backed by big companies. You know, what's the challenge of doing it indie style?
The biggest challenge, I'd say, is funding it. It's very expensive to produce your own comic. You know, you got to spend, you know, at least a couple $1,000 just to get a decent-sized issue out. Then you got to spend the money to print it. And then you got to book the tables, you spend money on the tables. And you gotta, so it's a financial hurdle mainly. With the internet, it's really easy to put a team together, though. It's just about funding that's the issue. And if you really want high quality work, and we really put high quality work into this comic, you kind of got to pay for it. So that's probably the biggest hurdle. But as long as you're on the internet, you can find people to put a comic together. It's not that hard to get a team together.
Awesome, that's great. And, you know, where can people find you? Where can people find the book if they're, you know, if our listeners want to go out and check it out?
You could follow me at Jagged Comic on Instagram, and you could go on Etsy.com/shop/JaggedComic to buy issues 1 and 2.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Hi, folks. I am here with Lainey Fenny, cosplayer. How's your show been so far?
It's really great, actually. I mean, I like it that it's smaller than... It's not too small, but it's small. Like, I get to meet everybody and go... I actually get to walk around and see everything, so I think it's pretty awesome.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I see you're in, like, on an Aquaman
yes.
vibe.
Yes.
Got a whole Atlantean vibe going on. Thoughts on the Justice League?
I haven't seen it yet.
Busy.
Yeah, I've been busy, but I think on Monday I'm going to try to go see it. I've obviously been excited for it for a long time now. So.
Very cool. Now, a couple of you-specific questions. How'd you get into costuming?
I think I started doing charity. It's called Hope for Henry Foundation. And I just met a bunch of people in the community through that, and they were like, you know, you should really try to go to conventions. And I was like, okay. And then I think I bought like a leotard and some fishnets, and I was like, I'm Black Canary.
Right.
And that's how it started. Now I have this. I don't know how I got here.
Somehow it all cascaded to this.
Yeah.
But what's your favorite thing to cosplay? Out of all the costumes you've done, what's your favorite one?
I think Supergirl, probably.
Supergirl?
Because I read the most Supergirl comics, and the kids are the best part about cosplay.
Right.
And it's just like every little girl is like, Supergirl.
They react really well to it.
Yeah, I love it.
And where The landscape for costuming and cosplay, a lot of it happens here in the, like, the heartland of, like, you know, the costuming communities here in these conventions. But a lot of it happens on Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah.
What do you is that challenging, keeping up with all of the different forms of social media, coming out to these things,
definitely,
you know, making it into something you do?
It's definitely like keeping up with all the Instagram posts. It's definitely like it could be a full-time job. I mean, it's
right.
Like, but it's also kind of addicting. It's like, what can I post next? It's,
right.
I don't know. It's fun. Everything about it is fun.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you keep the content fresh for your fans and innovative when it's these characters?
I have
characters.
A lot of friends who are photographers, and I just think we come up with something, and we're like, oh man, that'd be really cool to do, or just anything that's, you know, like Justice League, anything that's coming out that's new, let's do this, or Riverdale, anything. Just
right.
Take some photos, post it online.
Right.
Try to post it around the time when Riverdale
something's happening.
And, oh, look, I'm watching Riverdale too.
Right, right. And you get those very specific hits.
Yeah.
Anything coming up that you're excited to make or create or put out?
I have this thing where I have to do all super roles. Like,
right. I'm the same way with Superman and Batman.
Okay, yeah. So I have like a couple more Supergirls. It's one from Apocalypse, the animated.
Oh, cool,
animated
cool,
series.
Yeah.
She's like wearing, she's like evil kind of
right.
Dark Supergirl, I guess. So I want that, and I don't know. There's always like
something.
I have like millions of things in my head that I want to do. You know, there's always
right.
something.
Something brewing on the horizon.
Yeah.
If you had to plug yourself on any form of social media, where could people find you?
Lainey Fenny on Instagram and Lainey Jade on Facebook. I know it's confusing. I think I'm going to switch it.
All right.
But, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great con.
Thanks. You too.
Hey, I'm Eric Sellen from DeLorean Entertainment.
Awesome, Eric. Nice to meet you. And, you know, so when did you get started collecting all these cars? And why don't you just tell us a little bit more about the cars that you have in your fleet here?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's one of those things that started out with the Scooby-Doo van, which was one of my favorite things growing up. I loved watching Scooby-Doo. And it just kind of morphed from there. I've always been attracted to the kind of the one-offs and the oddball cars. Like, I always wanted a Pacer when I was a kid. And everyone was like, that's the ugliest car ever. I'm like, I know, but it's cool to me. So I ended up getting into doing more things, the Back to the Future DeLorean, the 66 Batmobile, the Batcycle. We have the Ecto-1A from Ghostbusters. We've got the family truckster from Vacation. You know, the list goes on and on. We just have a lot of fun. We love doing these shows. We get to meet really cool people like you guys. And, you know, it's just nothing better than watching the fans' face light up and go, oh, my gosh, look, it's the car from maybe your favorite movie.
Oh, that's awesome. And do you have, like, a favorite one in the collection, or is it, like, picking your favorite kid?
No, you know what? For me, it was Scooby-Doo, just because it was my first one. Here at the show, I've got what they call a mini Scooby-Doo van, which is built on a Kony 360, a Japanese microvan. I saw it on eBay, and I was like, that would make a really cool mini Scooby van. So I bought it and did it, and that's what I did. But, yeah, you know what? It's all about bringing joy to people, having fun. The kids love it. And, you know, the adults, I think a lot of times Comic-Con got to the point where it was getting too adultish, and the kids really like it. Now, you know, with the Supernatural car, now it's a current hit. It's something that people can relate to. And I think it's the first car in quite a while, other than Batman, where you've got a car that kind of becomes almost a star of the TV show or the movie, which is fun.
Definitely. Do you have any that you don't have in the collection yet that you're looking into getting that you might want to add one day?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. The newest one that I'm building, I'm doing the Jetsons.
Oh, and my dad would love that one. Big Jetsons guy.
Yeah, so I'm building that on a Jazzy, so I can do 360s and roll around, and we're doing LED lighting. I've got a big top being made for it right now. A company up in Vermont is doing it, so I'm going to have a plexiglass dome on it, which is going to be 5 foot around and 36 inches high in the center, and it'll actually run and drive. So that's the problem is I come to these shows and I think what I have is cool. I'm very blessed, and I'm, you know, I love doing things and being able to do, you know, podcasts and interviews with people, but I always look for the next thing. So for me, it's like, maybe I'm just never satisfied in my geekdom, but it's a lot of fun.
It's hard. Once you start collecting anything, I feel, especially something as cool as this, it's hard to stop.
Yeah, and like I said, I've been very lucky to be able to do a bigger type of thing where some people can't afford to do a car, and they're into the Fun Pops, or they're into comic books, or they're into, you know, wardrobes and different types of cosplay stuff. So I get it. You know, everyone's got their own passion. That's what makes this, or any Comic-Con, so cool, because there is nothing that says that's not allowed. Everything's kind of open game, and you're not, it's, you know what, excuse my mention, but We'll wait till the Ecto-1 to knock down.
That's pretty cool.
next to Planet Fitness, this is a no judgment zone.
There you go.
You know, so not to give them a cheap plug, but I think it's cool. I like when people can come and be themselves, or you can be anybody you want to be. So guess what? I dig it. I embrace it. I'm 56 years old, so I'm probably too old to be doing this, but I love it. It's fun.
That's all that matters, as long as you're having a good time with it.
Absolutely.
You're as young as you feel.
That's right.
And now, some of these cars obviously are based off of cars that were, you know, that have been out of production for a while. Obviously, the DeLorean, they're not making anymore. You know, the Batmobiles and model from the 60s. So is it hard to upkeep some of these older cars? Is it hard to find parts and keep them going? Obviously, you're doing a lot of cons and stuff, keeping them getting all over the place.
Yeah, you don't want to have to be pushing cars in and out. That just becomes a real nightmare. But the reality is there are parts available, and there's a company down in Texas and in Florida, DMC Motors, which you can get parts for the DeLoreans. As far as the Batmobile, most of them are built on a Lincoln type chassis because they want 127-inch wheelbase, which holds that body. So typically it's a Lincoln. So the nice part about that car is a 75 Lincoln. I can go to any auto parts store and get a starter, plugs, you know, things that might be required. But also with today's technology, as I'm not privy to because I'm not that geeky and that smart, but, you know, CNC machines, 3D printers, technology is amazing. I mean, you can get a 3D printer for your house now, which is just baffles my mind. I used to laugh because my mom could never work a VCR. And now I'm that guy. I'm like, holy crap, what's a 3D printer? And then they go, yeah, but you can build this. I'm like, that's amazing. Like what you guys have access to. I'm not saying you personally, but the generation, things are, the technology goes so fast, but it also becomes affordable much faster than in my day. So it's pretty cool. I mean, it's scary and cool all at the same time.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So you have a great fleet here. What is the coolest thing that you've ever gotten to do, the coolest event that you've ever done, the coolest thing anyone's ever asked you to bring the cars to?
I'm going to say top of my list is I got to do the reunion with Michael J. Fox and a complete cast from Back to the Future, which was awesome. I mean, Michael's a great person. As much as you see him on TV and feel, he's a great spokesperson for the Parkinson's research and that type of thing. He's just a good guy. And I'll tell you the truth. The majority of people I've had the benefit to work with, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, Adam West and Burt Ward for 7 years on and off doing shows with them bringing the car out. Everybody gets it. Like that, and again, it's a different time. They're people that Adam West, before he passed away, think about it. That show is 50 years old and was still relevant to you guys. So that's amazing. Back to the Future it's going to be 34 years old this year. That's amazing that people still look at it and say, it's relevant. It's time travel. How cool. Like, that's pretty clever. The thing I dig most about it is when I grew up as a kid, my go-to movie as a kid was Wizard of Oz. It was on once a year. It was always around the holidays, and that was it. You couldn't get DVDs and VHSs of it. Just wasn't out there. But Back to the Future has almost become that Wizard of Oz type of a cult classic that the young kids get it, they dig it, and it's kind of like, it's time travel. We still haven't perfected time travel, so you know what? It's okay. Like, it can still be a mystery, which I dig.
Yeah, and it's also, and especially, you know, now that sadly Adam West has passed away, you kind of get to carry on that legacy a little bit by bringing the car out to shows.
And I do, you know, and I think that's a benefit that when you have these cars, I let people sit in the car. It's a car. So I don't look at it as like, oh, my God, don't touch it. I want people to have that experience because a lot of the people that I see, and a lot of times it's dads who come in and go, oh, my God, I used to have to run home from school and watch that and sit on the couch and do my homework first or whatever the thing was. Like, it means a lot to people. It really is a generational touch. And I think that the cool part is that the young people that now are exposed to it and watch it, as much as it's campy, as the saying goes, they still kind of get it. It's quirky enough that it's cool.
Definitely. All right, so where can people find you on the web, on social media? You know, where's the best place to check you guys out?
The best place to check me out is probably DeLoreanEntertainment.com. Also, I work with Matt Bell. He's the country's number one Michael J. Fox lookalike. So you can go on to Matt Bell, a.k.a. Marty McFly, and follow his fan page. See, I'm too old to get into Twitter and all this kind of stuff. The only Twitter I know is Birds in the Trees. So I'm learning slowly, but I'm an old guy. So really, any of the shows, there's other people that do have cars than myself, and really, I give them all props. The fact that they're willing to come out, their time and bring their passion out so that people can see it. And the fact that you guys help promote it, you know, we're blessed and I appreciate it. But again, you know, it's for the betterment of us. I mean, the crazy political turmoil that we're in as a human race right now is crazy. This is like a safe haven. Everyone, you know,
brings people together.
You've got your views, I've got my views, but you know, bottom line, this is a common ground. We all dig having fun. We love comics. We love the whole idea of saying, cosplayer, sure. Is that the perfect costume? No, but it's your rendition, so you know what? It's perfect for you. So, you know what? Hey, I wish someday that Democrats and Republicans disappear, and it's like one con, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all, so we're all in the same field.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be cool?
I'd be down for that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure, and thank you so much. Have a great show.
Yeah, thank you. All right, you guys, we are here with Meredith Finch, comic book writer. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Great. So when did you know that you wanted to be a comic book writer? When did you decide that that was something that came into your orbit that you wanted to pursue?
Not until after I met my husband, David Finch, who, before I met him, I didn't even know comics existed in the current form that they do. I had read old comics that were my parents, but that's... You know, Betty and Veronica was sort of the extent of my comic book knowledge. And I've been married to Dave for probably 10 years before he kind of said, you should, and you keep throwing comics my way. You should read this. You would like it. I think you would like this comic. And I'd be like, no, you know, I have time to read Dr. Seuss and The Cat in the Hat to the kids right now. I don't have time for your comic book deal. And I want to say I picked up a Kevin Smith Daredevil. And I could not put it down. It was just so good. I'm like, oh, this is what comics are. I could really get into this. And then I think he was working on Forever Evil at the time with Jeff Johns. And this amazing scene that Lex Luthor and Bizarro, and Bizarro sacrificed himself for Lex Luthor. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. I'm like, okay, now I really... Comics are pretty awesome, and I had always thought I would write a book, a fantasy novel, and after reading comics, Dave was like, maybe you should try comics instead, and he kind of just pushed me into it. He's like, I like your writing, I think you should do it, and one thing just came in, it was kind of all things being at the right time in the right place, because the kids were old enough that they didn't need as much of my time and attention, so yeah.
Awesome. And what would you say are some of the unique challenges to writing comic books as opposed to, you know, writing in other mediums as opposed to writing a book?
Comics come out monthly, so you don't get as many rewrites or take-backs as you might if you were writing a novel. Because with a novel, you can write and go back, and you send to your editor, and they send it back to you, and you have time to go back and rethink stuff. But with a monthly comic book, You have a certain amount of time, window to get it done, and then that needs to go as it is to your artist, and maybe you can change dialogue here or there after the fact, but you really have to be willing to accept that it's not, may not be perfect, but you do your best. So I do think it's really good for forcing you to not get too much in your head about particular things. Like, you just need to commit and keep on moving.
Excellent. And you've obviously done a lot of work with Wonder Woman. We're surrounded by Wonder Woman pictures right now. What was your favorite part about working on that character, you know, a character that's been around for such a long time that's so beloved, and what did you try to bring to those stories when you wrote them?
I love the fact that you can take a character that's been around for so long and still find nuances within who they are and what they are within the greater DC universe that you can look at and talk about. And for us, it, being a mom myself and feeling, you know, overwhelmed at times, I looked at the situation she was in when we were taking on the book, where she was a member of the Justice League, the God of War. Her mother was in stone, so she was acting as Queen of the Amazons. And I thought, well, I mean, any one of those things would be really overwhelming for one person. How would somebody deal with that? And so I really tried to approach our story from how would Wonder Woman, or how does a superhero cope with the pressures of being pulled in multiple directions, all for really important reasons. So, yeah, I think I tried to bring more of a modern day female perspective to the character, because I think although we all struggle with that, I think sometimes we don't, it doesn't get articulated as well as it could maybe.
And now obviously the, you know, Wonder Woman's finally hit the big screen in not only Wonder Woman earlier in the year but Justice League now. What was that like for you to finally see a character that, you know, had a very long journey to the big screen that you spent so much time with? You know, what was that like for you?
I feel like it was 100% worth it. If you could have a movie as amazing as what Patty Jenkins did with that movie. And a character is an actor, Gal Gadot, who represents a character so beautifully. So it's one of those good things are worth waiting for, and I feel like I really couldn't criticize anything about that movie. I love that we've got, if we're going to do the first female superhero movie, I think it's right that it should be Wonder Woman, and I think they did a beautiful job with it, and now we have a whole new generation of young people who have, just like I looked up to Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, who can now look up to Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman.
And what are you working on right now? You know, what do you want to, what do you have here with you today?
I have Rose through Image Comics, which is a fantasy fiction story about a young girl whose land is being ruled by a tyrannical queen, and she needs to access her magic to save her kingdom. And I'm also going to be coming out in February, Xena the Warrior Princess through Dynamite.
Awesome.
Sorry.
No problem. So where can people find you online if they want to connect with you, or if they want to check out your work, if they want to check out Rose, where could they find that?
You can find me on Twitter. It's at FinchMeredith1. I'm on Facebook. I think it's at FinchMeredith1. I'm on Instagram, FinchMeredith1. You notice a theme. I have number one, but I clearly was not the first one with Finch Meredith.
It's hard to get It's hard to get those handles. I've been trying to get my name for years.
Yeah. So, and then you can also find me on our website is www.dfinchartist.com.
Excellent. One last question. So what's it like living in a totally comic book household?
There's a lot of comic books. I'm like, no more comics, because they come every month. But it's awesome. It's so much fun. You know, our kids love it. It's very, it's like, it keeps you immersed in culture, and it feels very fresh and fun. I love it.
Excellent. Well, Meredith, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, that about wraps up our con coverage for NJ Comic Expo.
I had a great time, Dan. Did you have a great time?
Very, very cool.
Did you enjoy spending the day with me?
I enjoyed spending the day with you. Did you enjoy spending the day with me, Michael?
I did enjoy spending the day with you, Dan.
I thought you were about to say I didn't.
No, I didn't, but I was lying for the people, for the listeners. Picked up some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Talked to a lot of great people. Special thanks to Rags Morales, Meredith Finch, the New Jersey Ghost Corps,
the 501st Legion,
Eric with DeLorean Entertainment, Isaiah Huga. Don't want to mispronounce your name. Sorry if I did, Isaiah. Go check out his book. Lainey Fenny, cosplayer.
Yep.
So we had a great time. We had a great time talking to all those people.
Yep.
And we hope you guys had a great time listening.
Sentiments echo!